Final hour of Overdrive. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Mike Johnson. We're up on TSN 4. You can listen to us on TSN 1050 and also the TSN app in a couple minutes. Marcellus Wiley will join us to talk about everything that's going on in the NFL, NBA trying to get going. Teams arriving in Orlando today. I know the Raptors were speaking today, Mike, and it really, you know, they've been in Florida for 2 weeks. Fort Myers, not Orlando. It sounds like it went about as perfectly as it could have gone, considering the state that they're in and what could have gone wrong.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't heard much about them. And I think at this point, where we are in the news sports cycle is no news is good news.
Right.
And the fact that they were down there able to train and isolate and hang out, and there were no positive tests, and they kind of had a quiet existence. It wasn't normal. Nick Nurse talked about, you know, having to work out guys kind of individually. It's like a basketball camp in the middle of summer, because you're there from 9 in the morning till 9 at night by the time you cycle through one guy or three guys or four guys on the court at a time. But no one tested positive on the Raptors. They have all their full complement of players there. Nobody's opted out. No one's decided to not participate or didn't feel safe enough. So it's possible, which I guess is the takeaway. It's possible if you are committed to it, and that's what the players will have to be when they get there.
Well, not only did no one test positive on the Raptors, but he mentioned today Kyle Lowry looks great, and he's been in every morning working out. Marc Gasol, we've seen the pictures. We know how good he looks right now.
Yes.
And Chris Boucher yesterday admitted that he was able to put on 15 pounds, which has not been easy for
will we notice? He's so thin.
Yeah.
Will we even be able to tell?
But this is what adds to the intrigue of this season is yeah, like, you know, ideally you don't have 4 months off in the middle of a year, but your team is coming back differently,
right,
and individuals are coming back differently. Like, a guy could throw on 20, like look at what's going on in golf. Bryson DeChambeau used that time,
right,
to become a mammoth human being who's crushing drives 170 yards, and you know, he won last weekend in Detroit. We don't know what kind of teams we're getting here. I can assume that LeBron James is going to be good at basketball, and the Lakers will be really good, and Kawhi will be good. But we, you know, throw out everything that was happening in March, because A, the momentum, right, is clearly gone, but also certain players are in different physical shape.
What if Ben Simmons learned how to take a jump shot? I mean, who knows what could happen over the course of 3 or 4 months? You can do a lot of different things with your body, with your game, if you apply that time judiciously. So, Marc Gasol barely looks like the same guy. Kyle Lowry looks like he's in great shape. And I think for the Raptors, no, it's all speculation until they get to it. But for the Raptors, who went on the deepest run that they could last year, they have some veteran players that are really important. Ibaka and Gasol and Lowry, older guys that bodies, it's hard to go back to back to back. It's hard on your bodies to have this time off. You'd like to think that returning the core group, Kawhi excluded, they'd be able to gel quickly, get on the same page. They're all smart basketball players, that they should be able to transition to their game plan quickly, but also get the benefit of taking the time off. So they get the rest without the rust, because they're a little bit more experienced. That would be the optimistic spin on what's going on with the Raptors right now.
And we've talked about players in hockey who have had access to ice. Like, I'm thinking of the Swedes, who were able to be on the ice in like April, and whether or not that's a benefit or not. Like, if you had the benefit of hindsight and you knew how long it was going to be paused in terms of the season, would you have wanted that opportunity that some players got to be on the ice, or is that almost a waste? And, you know, this mini training camp is going to be enough. Would that be enough for you, Mike?
It would be more than enough for me,
okay,
Mark. Yes, it would be more than enough. I would be okay with the 2 weeks. I think if there was going to be a super compressed camp, then yeah. But I don't know how many guys are doing skill development over in Sweden. They were just kind of playing scrimmage, summer hockey style stuff. Yes, they're on the ice, their timing's there, but I don't think it's going to be a huge advantage, given the fact that guys could be in phase two now for a few weeks, then get to phase three for 2 more weeks or 3 more weeks almost. I think any rust advantage will be negated by the time everyone gets to August 1st and playing games that count.
Our next guest definitely would have been ready for training camp, regardless of how long the season would be paused. From FS1, Marcellus Wiley, who was supposed to join us yesterday. Some sort of news came out in hockey that kind of pushed him off to the side, so we apologize for that, but always great to have you on the show, Marcellus.
Oh, appreciate you guys, but I don't know how ready I would have been if the sport is hockey, man. I'm not the best on ice.
Okay, that aside, I'm sure you would have been ready to
listen, Marcellus. You would be more ready for a hockey game than I would be for one down of a football game. So you got us all covered there, clearly.
Yeah, you made a great point there, because one of those car accidents on the highway of a football field, oh my God, I would never want to do it again
no
myself.
No chance.
Poor Mike. On top of just getting life back to kind of normalcy in a bit and just watching sports, are you looking forward to these leagues starting up and you individually looking at players and saying, oh, I know what he did over the last couple of months, or just getting fascinated with an athlete having the opportunity to remake their body in a way?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating on so many levels. Like you said, just the fact that sports are going to resume and start up, and it's just going to be interesting to see how leadership presents itself. And we know that, unfortunately, some guys will contract the virus. And how does that impact the business? How does that impact the product in terms of teams being compromised, maybe losing a star player or not? So it's going to be interesting to just see it from that dynamic, as well as just how guys are going to approach the game. Is there going to be so much anxiety about what's going on in our world and some of the social issues that have come into sports as well, political issues, and obviously the health crisis we're all experiencing with the pandemic. So just a lot of things at play right now. But I'm interested in seeing how guys compartmentalize. One of the greatest things about being an athlete is that ability to put things in their proper perspective. And I don't think enough fans understand that or give the athletes credit. There were so many times, whether it was in the process of preparation or game day, you're on the way to the stadium, there's more traffic than normal, moms is calling for extra tickets, you just got into an argument with your girlfriend, your kids didn't want you to leave the house, and you're still trying to look at your game plan just to make sure you go out there and beat a 300-pound man against his will to the punch. And it's just so funny that that's just a normal day, but there's so many details, so many mundane things that happen in the daily occurrence of athletes. It's going to be fun to watch it go back and resume.
So many questions and so many unknowns, which will make it fascinating. Marcellus, as a fan or as an analyst, former player, where do you think the threshold is for guys leaving if they happen to get sick? You know, if it's basketball, if LeBron goes down, is that it? Like, fans be like, this is not even worth it. This is not really the true test. Like, where do you think that threshold is for fans?
Not in my eyes. We don't stop for anything. And I know
it's going to
sound heartless. Yeah, let me explain it, because I know it sounds heartless, but this is the leadership that I would present if I were Adam Silver or in charge of any of these leagues. The thing is, I would have to treat the coronavirus going forward, just because I know we have to play our games, we have to get our money, these players need their money as well, the sport needs to resume, I would treat this like a physical injury. And I know it's difficult for some people to translate that, but the reality is, if you catch the coronavirus and these young athletes who are younger than the people that are typically compromised, let's say a 14-day quarantine, you know, Brandon Mitchell, Spider Mitchell, and Rudy Gobert, Kevin Durant, like all these guys have, you know, obviously contracted the virus and have done their 14-day quarantine. Most reports are that they felt fine actually during their quarantine, and then they resume normal activities. So the way that we treat it is going to sound just like what happens on the injury report when you have a sprained ankle. And it's crazy. If you have a high ankle sprain, you're out 4 to 6 weeks. If you catch the coronavirus and everything goes as it's been going so far for these athletes, you're out 2 weeks. That's just the way the game is going to play. We're going to look at this as a part of the injury report, but treat it more mentally like a physical injury, physical issue. You're going to lose LeBron for 2 weeks. Play the game. If LeBron has a hamstring, you would have to miss him for 2 weeks. So I think that just has to be the mindset. If not, you're going to have 1 foot on the gas, 1 foot on the brake. You're going to stop, go, and it's not going to work out.
Joined by Marcellus Wiley from FS1 in the NFL, we're still kind of trying to figure out how they're going to play games, when they're going to play games. Our fans going to be in the building, but one thing we do know, Patrick Mahomes is going to be the quarterback of the Chiefs for a long time, and if you need to borrow some money, he is your man. If you add up all the incentives, that's $500 million. I know in the NFL you have to talk about the guaranteed money, which is just over $140 million. For someone that's gone 24-7 in his young career and have already won a Super Bowl, it still begs the question, is this money well spent by Kansas City?
Oh, definitely by Kansas City. This was a team-friendly deal. Despite it being the largest contract in sports history, beating out Mike Trout, it's still a team-friendly deal. And I think it's the details that people have to understand. I'll give it to you in layman's terms. The next 3 years, Patrick Mahomes will make $63 million on this new deal. You know how much Teddy Bridgewater is going to make in his next 3 years? Teddy Bridgewater, $63 million, the same exact number, except Teddy Bridgewater gets to be a free agent and go out there and get more money and try to close that gap between his 3 years, 63, and Patrick Mahomes in his first 3 years making 63. But here's the killer. You know how much Dak Prescott will make in the next 3 years if Dallas Cowboys continue to drag their feet and franchise them like they did this year? $123 million. $123 million. Now, I'm going to ask you this. Is Dak Prescott as good as Patrick Mahomes? No. So why is he going to make nearly double of a Patrick Mahomes if he's not as good? And I tell you this. This deal was so interesting because you can tell that he factored in a few things. The comfort of being in Kansas City, he loved the community, loved the team, he loved playing there. The arsenal that they have around them in terms of the team and the weapons. And then more so, to create a situation where he certainly was getting paid, but allowed enough room, enough money on the table, left that for others to get paid and the team to have flexibility to pay them. So as Tom Brady always had the reputation of taking a haircut to help the team, as much as money as this is, he kind of took a haircut. And for me, the player, I'm not going to try and take that responsibility as being the capologist and worrying about how the team pays this money, because it's a universal application in terms of the hard cap. Every team has to deal with it. So it's just an interesting play. I'm not mad at him because he's putting the team first or he's putting championships first, and it's still hard for me to say that he just got $500 million. But he could have played it out in a typical short-term fashion like Dak Prescott wants to, like a Kirk Cousins did, or you can look at a Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Russell Wilson. They signed four-year deals. And when you sign those four-year deals, you're able to go back to the negotiation table and get more and more and more. He could have made so much more money if he would have played it and bet on himself versus I'm going to bet with the team and take a long-term deal.
Take the security. Interesting, Marcellus, that there's enough money left over, because I was curious to see how the team would react, but it sounds like they'll react positively. Mm-hmm. And listen, Teddy Bridgewater needs all that money to buy gloves. Like, he's got to need the gloves to throw the ball. So that does not come cheap. So he needs the full $63 million. There's no doubt about that. But, Marcellus, what I want to know then is, what does Jerry Jones do with Dak? I know it's the Dallas Cowboys are a big story because they're a big team, but are they going to just keep franchising him? At some point, are they going to commit to this guy? And given the Mahomes contract, how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, they have to July 15th for this year to get that long-term deal, or we just have to do the same song and dance next offseason. Mm-hmm. And he's already guaranteed $31 million. So if you think about it, Dak Prescott, who's only made $4 million on the field, now has a floor of $31 million. So as much as he wants long-term security, and I don't think there is any longer-term security than what Patrick Mahomes just signed, you kind of feel really comfortable just betting on yourself. Hey, I've already made 7-8 times more than I've made in my whole career. I'm going to make that in 1 year. And I don't think people understand what that really means, because I've been there before on the rookie deal, and then all of a sudden you get the big contract. My grandmother used to always say that the fish doesn't get bigger than the tank. And it's true. Duh. No matter what tank you have, you put the fish in there, that's all it has to work with. And when you're on a rookie deal, you kind of learn how to be successful and do all the things you want to do on whatever limited amount of money that is. And I know the average person is like, it's still a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It is, but in that locker room, in a relative scope, it's not. There are guys making tons of money, and on a rookie deal, you're not making that much. But what happens is you get used to that lifestyle. You get used to that world. You get used to all those things. You already got your house. You already got a car or two. Your mom's got her house. Like, you're good. And you're like, oh, I live. Dak Prescott lived on $4 million plus his endorsements. And then one day, from 4 years, every year you got $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $1 million. And the next year they say, here's 31. Do you understand where your mind goes? You're like, what do I do? I have nothing to spend it on. So some guys just spend it on the same thing and do it the dumb way and just keep buying the same thing over and over, but more expensive. And then other guys are just like, there's nothing to do with this but invest it, and they have a great life post-retirement. So he's in a no-lose. He can't lose. He's getting 31 this year. He'll get 37 if they franchise him again next year, and I dare them to do it one more time. He'll make $54 million that next year. So Dak Prescott can't lose, brother.
Marcellus Wiley joining us on Overdrive, and you just said, you know, having a great life, and it immediately brings me to Cam Newton and the videos that he posted during last year's season when he's lighting the cigar and he's got the, I think he had a glass of wine next to him, and Cam Newton was having a real nice life. Just that life ended quickly with the Carolina Panthers. Now, this past week, Cam Newton has said that he is tired being so humble. That is intriguing on multiple fronts, especially considering the team he's going to. We'll let Marcellus answer that. But how do you see Cam Newton and Bill Belichick getting along?
Yeah, this is interesting because that video, you could take it two different ways. The first way you could say, uh-oh, here we go. Contention is brewing. And he's taking a shot at Jarrett Stidham, who is this quote-unquote competition. Even though he's only thrown four NFL passes, imagine a guy who's only thrown four passes in his short career versus the NFL MVP who's now healthy again. It really shouldn't be a competition. I don't think it is. So it could be Cam Newton on video taking a shot at him. You're going to try and choose that over me? Mm-hmm. Or it could be looking at Teddy Bridgewater. It could be looking backwards at Carolina still, you know, mad at your ex-girl because of she moved on without you. And you're like, oh, you're going to choose Teddy Bridgewater and the gloves over me? And I think Cam Newton may be taking a shot backwards as well. Either way it goes, it's not the best look for Cam Newton because he shouldn't be looking backwards. You're in New England. Like, you're in a prime position to do exactly what you want to do and get your career back on track. But more importantly, what happens in sports a lot of times is we write the story. We're just waiting for the moment to capture it. So Kobe and Shaq, Kobe and Dwight Howard, moments where you saw friction on a team, it was actually written before they had those moments. And when you hear a comment like that, there's some beat writer in Boston right now like, oh, once I see Jarrett Stidham looking at Cam Newton wrong or Cam Newton yelling at Jarrett Stidham for something, God, look what happened in July when Cam made this video. And they're going to have content. So in a professional way, I wish he wouldn't make videos in that respect. But you ever work out with weights and lifting weights and running and trying to do all you can to prepare, and your favorite song comes on, you kind of go insane for a minute, and I think he did.
Get a little hype up, man. You get hyped. That's
that
what happens.
One way to analyze it.
And listen, I bet that's what the entire NFL did when they started canceling preseason games. Am I right? How excited are the players, Marcellus, to just be almost rid of preseason games altogether?
Oh, can we all sing on three? Joy to the world.
That's it.
I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? Like, it's so crazy you're an NFL player and you look back on your football career. Like, I played 10 years in the NFL, but I actually played 25 years of football. We count Pop Warner. We count high school. And in Pop Warner, no preseason games. Pop Warner, you're 8 years old, and they're like, no, you don't need a preseason game. Just go play the other team across the city. You go to high school, no preseason games. Just go play the other school across the street. Go beat them up. Mm-hmm. College, no preseason games. Just go out there and, hey, you got to play Alabama Tech day one. Who cares?
And then it's the pros when you're at the high, when you're at the supreme level, you're the best you can be. And they're like, oh, wait a minute. We need to play 4 preseason games to make sure you guys are okay. We're like, what? We're like, we've been used to not playing this. And I think if anyone can just hit the ground running, it's professionals. So it's just, you know, we know what it is. They got to get the money out the fans and the season ticket holders, and it pays our salaries, so we get it. But joy to the world, man. Get rid of preseason. No one wants to get dressed, especially half the games. You get dressed, and it takes longer to get dressed than you're actually out there playing. And you're like, dude, why am I all taped up for this? And it's just a show. It's a production. So not a single player I know is sitting there upset that they don't have preseason right now. Let's go.
Well, let's just hope that week one happens at this point, right? So
yeah, that's the goal.
Let's go at it. Let's hopeful. Like, we're all hopeful that there is football. And maybe we will see Cam Newton not so humble starting for the New England Patriots. We'll see.
Look at her.
Marcellus, thanks so much for changing your schedule and coming on today with us. Always a pleasure. All the best to you and your family, and we'll chat soon.
All right, guys. I'm about to go outside, get my slapstick going. It's time to get my hockey up.
All right. You will be forecasting the Stanley Cup playoffs soon on Overdrive. Get ready, okay?
I look forward to it, brothers. Take care.
There you have it. Marcellus Wiley from FS1. It's an interesting point. No exhibition games at any level in football.
Right.
And then at the NFL, you have to play 4 games. And I guess there's not a whole lot of playing, especially if you're a starter, but still.
Yeah, right. You're playing one series, one set of downs. It's a financial thing. There's talent evaluation, that part of it. And I think also football, more than just about any other sport, is micromanaged by coaches and game plans, because it's a dead ball every start. I do believe probably there some guys maybe take a little time to absorb the entire playbook or the entire defensive scheme, and maybe there's some value there. But I know in hockey, like, you know, I guess to get the competitive spirit up a little bit, but you could probably slide right into a regular season game. It would be fine. It's not much different than an exhibition game, and it's not that complicated. You're not learning anything new. I'm not learning a system that I otherwise need to figure out. Now, maybe in football a little bit, but yeah, like, you don't do it any other time in your life. All of a sudden we have to do it now. We're pros because we can't figure it out in time to start just regular season games. Spoken like an ex-pro, Marcellus. Yeah. I like it.
Just jump on the treadmill and let's go. And
that's it.
That will hopefully be the case August 1st when the Stanley Cup playoffs gets going, or the playing games that allow teams to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Ryan Rashog is based out of Edmonton, and Edmonton is kind of the epicenter for this whole thing. All 4 rounds, Stanley Cup final. We'll chat with him when we return on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on your TV on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Mike Johnson. And let's go right out to Edmonton because, well, everything's going out to Edmonton. The Stanley Cup will be in Edmonton later this fall. Almost said summer. At least we hope. Let's go to Ryan Rashog. And Ryan, my first question is, are you okay?
Why are you asking me that?
Well, I follow you on Twitter, as you know.
Oh, the tweet. Yes. That was devastating, fellas. Like, I'm not much of an outdoorsman, and when something that size, so I'm getting ready to shoot a stand-up, landed right on my temple, and when I reached up to grab it, it was substantial. Like, it felt like there was something substantial in my hand. It rattled me.
We
had some weight to it.
And luckily, we're on TV, and TSN 4 is showing the video, so it's giving part of our audience. And one of the guys who usually is on this show, sitting in the studio, is our friend Jamie McLennan. And if he's watching, it's just affirming that he is never going outdoors because he is scared of bugs.
Yeah, well, and he's from around these parts, so he knows. The amazing thing is the power of Twitter. The fact that something like that can happen and 19,000 people watched it is that's mind-boggling.
Well, we want to make sure that you're okay because, well, first off, I care for your livelihood. And also, you should be a really busy guy. You usually are, but has excitement started to build in that city as we get now to, what, 3 weeks until the actual games start happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on who you ask, right? There's a certain segment of the hockey fan that would say, well, I'm not going to be out partying and watching the games anyways. So whether, you know, I'm watching them in my basement, if they're in Toronto or Vegas or Vancouver or wherever, it's not going to matter. But then I think there's the other probably more diehards who are really intrigued at the idea of having all these players in town and the competition happening in town here. And that, you know, I think when word came out that the Stanley Cup final and the conference finals were potentially happening here, I think that definitely shot a little bit of excitement into people. You know, because we don't know what things are going to look like a couple months down the road. And outdoor gathering, I mean, the number has just gone up recently for the number of people that can gather outdoors here in Alberta. And maybe that number goes up again. And so the potential for watch parties and such a couple months down the road might be fairly exciting for hockey fans. And you know, if the Edmonton Oilers manage to make any sort of run at all and get a little bit deep into the playoffs, then, yeah, I think there could be great payoff there for Edmonton hockey fans.
Well, before now, I guess you're not trolling the hallways of the political leaders anymore. You're our inside guy for all things Ottawa and government, so maybe you can knock that off your to-do list and just focus on the hockey and the sports. Did a great job doing all that, Ryan. But we know in Toronto, it sounds like the players are going to be around the exhibition grounds, and that's where the hotel, and they're going to hang out. In Edmonton, trying to create a bubble, can you maybe just explain to the listeners, what will life be like for the players? Where will they be hanging out for the better part of a couple months?
Yeah, so there's a brand new hotel right across the street from a brand new, well, fairly new rink. So the JW Marriott across the street, it's really nice, it's a big hotel. They'll be able to fit all the players there. And you can walk out the front doors of the JW and cross the street and you're at the rink. But there's also a pedway system, and I believe that's going to be the access point. You don't actually have to go outside if you don't want to. The pedway goes across to Ford Hall. Now, Ford Hall is this massive, it's a massive pedway that crosses 104th, which is one of the main streets downtown. So it's kind of this pedway system. And this is all going to be within the bubble. Ford Hall will be within the bubble. And then there will also be the ice district. They've just recently finished this huge courtyard area. Kind of think somewhat LA Live in principle. Right. That's finished now, and that will also be all within the context of the bubble. So players will have the hotel, they'll have, you know, there'll be things that can be set up for them inside in case it's a rainy day. There'll be things that are set up outside for them, you know, whether it's outside patios, places to watch games, places to hang out, you know, play some virtual golf, shoot some pool, whatever they want to do on a day off, right? Because on a day off, maybe you want to try and get away from things a little bit. You know, then there's also talk about, you know, maybe as things go on, the potential for golf excursions. They've done some work with a local golf course to try and isolate a day where they can, you know, a day here or there where they can get players out to the course. So I think they tried, you guys, to make it very clear what the player experience was going to be like. They were pretty vocal about that. They wanted that to get out there because I think they felt like Edmonton might get overlooked in the process if they weren't a little bit squeaky. And I think that's why we heard more from the Edmonton bid than any other bid publicly.
Joined by Ryan Rashog, our TSN Edmonton Bureau reporter. And Bob McKenzie has been reporting for the last week about, you know, not only the return to play, but also a new CBA. And one of the big points that fans are just kind of grabbing onto is that the NHL would be going back to the Olympics. And there has always been that fear that Connor McDavid would go through his entire career and not play at the Olympics. Now that it looks promising, I know they still have to deal with the IOC and the IIHF, but just with dealing with Connor McDavid usually on a daily basis, I know you can't right now, how much does it mean for him to be able to play for Canada at the highest level and not have to play for Team North America?
Yeah, well, Connor will never really express, you know, the intensity of whatever feelings he has. Like, he tends to try and play it fairly safe, but he has always made it clear that he wants to play in the Olympics. I don't know if there was anybody more upset at the idea of the NHL not being in the next two Olympics than McDavid. Like, I think he wants to be there. Mm-hmm. I think if you think about his generation, you know, his age group, what they would have grown up watching. I mean, 2010 would have been a pretty pivotal moment in his hockey watching life, I think. I think McDavid wants to be there, and I think he's probably super excited at the idea, although it's a little ways away here. But, yeah, I mean, the guy wants to be there. He grew up watching Canada have glory on that stage. Why wouldn't he want a chance to go there and do it himself?
And I imagine, Ryan, like all the great ones, there are things competitively he wants to achieve, but also, you know, resume. He wants to have that experience and win a gold medal. That's what all the great players of his generation that he's looked up to have had a chance of doing, and he'll have that hopefully in 2022. But before he gets there, he's got to get through this summer and get back to camp. So how are the Oilers looking health-wise as guys kind of get back into the city, get back towards training camp, which starts up Monday? And, you know, who's going to play on Connor McDavid's left wing? I'm going to ask you a hockey question, if you can believe it, after 5 months.
All right.
I forget. I'm not sure. Ask me something political and I got her nailed, boys. Listen, I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was spending some time there in and around when things shut down. I think there's a good chance you could see Nugent-Hopkins on the left side, Cassian over on the right. And then you go with Draisaitl down the middle and Yamamoto on the other wing there. Not sure what the left wing situation looks like on that second line. You got a few options, right? I mean, Ken Holland did a good job of putting some fairly usable players into the lineup at deadline time. If you recall, you know, Tyler Ennis came in and was a nice fit in a couple of different spots in the lineup. We'll see what Athanasiou brings them. Wasn't a great fit in the early stages for him, right, but we'll see. So yeah, they've got some options. And then my guess is, guys, they're going to want some veteran presence in the lineup. So you could see guys like Chiasson and Neal in and around that fourth line, but guys who have been around that'll round out their sort of third and fourth line wings. But I would say Nugent Hopkins to answer your question, Johnny.
You know, it was funny. We were joking earlier in the show just the things that you forget because of the pandemic. And after to see you being the Oilers, like, oh, yeah, that's right. They did pick him up. one thing
I remember Mike Green, too, right?
Yeah. Like, it's
all right.
The trade deadline seems like, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And even if you ask me right now what the biggest deal was, it would take me probably 5 minutes to remember.
Yeah.
But one thing I do remember was, you know, the goalie situation was good, but it wasn't solidified by anyone. Is there one guy or another that probably is the inside track on the first game of this this play-in round?
Right. So if I would have to bet my mortgage on who's going to start, I would say Mike Smith. I think Dave Tippett will lean towards the veteran experience of Mike Smith in this situation. Now, if you look at the way that they had been playing in the months leading up to the shutdown, both guys had taken their turns really having dominant stretches. And right before everything shut down, Mikko Koskinen put together a string of like three or four games where he was ridiculous. Like, his numbers were ridiculous. And so to me, the messaging to these guys could be, look, you've both shown you could carry this thing. They've both had dips in their play as well. So there's faith in both of them. Make it a jump ball. Like, bring them into training camp and say, look, you know, play hard. Show us, you know, through the couple of exhibition games. I think it's close enough between these two. You could go with just whoever looks better at the time. It's a short series, and you don't have time to back into it and let anybody feel their way in. Now, the one element that Mike Smith brings that I think they will like is that ability to grab that puck and fire it up the wall to wingers and defensemen and can nullify the other team's forecheck. And I could see Dave Tippett leaning towards having that asset in his lineup.
Did you just say a couple exhibition games? Do we know if it's going to be one or two?
I don't know. Good question. I don't know the answer to that. I would think that they would need to have a couple guys. Maybe I'm wrong, but think about it. If you're bringing 28 guys,
right,
and you, even if you potentially want to maybe use 23 or 24 of them through the course of the tournament, right, are there going to be guys on your roster that don't even get a chance at an exhibition game? Like, don't you need to get everybody into at least one exhibition game? And you can't do that if you only have one unless you're allowing 26, 27 guys on the bench. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm overthinking that,
yeah.
But...
yeah. I just wonder if time will be of the essence or how many games they want to play. But two would be preferable. I just wonder if they get squeezed down to one. But I think a lot of people are looking at this series, Chicago-Edmonton, as one of the more fun series to watch in this play-in round.
Sure.
And with the unpredictability of what has gone on, you know, people like to say Chicago with their stars and Patrick Kane and Corey Crawford playing pretty well will pose a pretty significant test for Edmonton. What do you think of the matchup for the Oilers in the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I think it's advantage Edmonton. I think when you've got two of the most dynamic offensive players in the game heading into a series, that's a shorter series, I think it's advantage Edmonton. Their 5-on-5 play had really rounded out their ability to produce.
The number one power play in the league, the number two penalty kill in the league. By the way, they'll have the number one special teams, both power play and penalty kill, left in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I think it's advantage Edmonton for a number of reasons, and Chicago defensively at times wasn't great this year. But there is that Patrick Kane factor, and we've watched over the years, you guys, when Patrick Kane decides he's going to, you know, he's going to get something done, he can be incredibly clutch, and he can dismantle teams when he chooses. So, you know, I think there's always that danger there. But if the layoff doesn't dramatically affect the efficiency of their power play, their ability to kill penalties. The other thing, too, and I'm not sure what you think about this, guys, but you got Ethan Bear playing basically top-pairing minutes. He's a rookie. Mm-hmm. Kyler Yamamoto playing on the second line and producing as a rookie. What are the chances that after a layoff this long, the Oilers can pick right back up where they left off with their special teams, with those two young, inexperienced players playing at that high level, and with the goaltending holding? Because if any one of those things comes out from underneath them, it really hurts their chances.
Ryan, before we let you go, because you're so tight with the federal government, any idea if they will allow the Blue Jays to play games in Toronto?
Yeah, was just working on that one, guys. So give me another 10 minutes and I'll have all the answers for you. No, I'm not sure, man. All I know is this, that when I see that the hoops that the NHL has jumped through, the integrity of this bubble they're going to try and create, how much detail has gone into this plan, how much it took for them to convince the federal government to, you know, ease up the quarantine a little, and then all of a sudden they're just going to start rolling ball players over the border en masse. Yeah. My jaw dropped a little bit. I was like, holy smokes, just knowing the hoops the NHL had to jump through.
Well, and I would only think people in your part of the country would be even more critical, just considering that your numbers have been low for a while, and it's only the last maybe a month that Ontario has been, you know, really gotten it down under 200, and it was 100 and I think 11 today. You know, like there's a lot of support to just keep the borders shut down, you know, outside of obviously professional athletes. So
people want it to make sense, right? So whether you're a baseball fan or not, whether you're a hockey fan or not, lay the basics of the plan out. And if people can look at that and go, okay, I can kind of understand how that makes sense, then you're probably on pretty solid footing. That's my sense of the plan that the NHL has put into play. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but you can see how they feel like it makes sense. They're giving themselves the best chance. The situation baseball has going on, I'm maybe not quite as convinced.
Yeah.
Shaggy, one more thing before we let you go. Will the players be able to visit the mountains, which are right beside the arena, based on the promotional? I just, like, where is that excursion kind of scheduled?
In bathrobes with champagne.
The quick trip to the mountains that apparently have just developed in the 4 months since I've last been to Edmonton.
So there's going to be Segways right outside the hotel you can hop on. And they're with the big beefy tires, so you can
they'd have to be
on the Segway.
And a big battery.
Groups of five or less and socially distanced with masks, but you can hop on a Segway and hit the mountain.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Well, let's hope we get there. If we get to phase four, I think we've, or at least the league has gotten over a huge hurdle, and we're talking about playing games.
Oh, 100%. And you know what, guys, quickly as we leave, what I'll say is that I think in talking to people around the league, I think there's as much concern about getting through phase three as there is about what might happen in phase four. To me, phase three, where players are inside a bubble when they're at the rink but kind of doing their own thing the rest of the time, I think the risk of things to maybe get a little bit out of hand is every bit as significant in phase three as four. So I think there'll be a sigh of relief when all the planes land in the two cities and phase three is behind them.
Yeah, Bob was saying the same thing earlier in the show. It really, this next week is going to be crucial if they're able to pull this off. Ryan, great talking to you again. I'm glad that you're safe. Glad that you have avoided a murder hornet, and we can get back to talking about the left wing on Connor McDavid's line. So,
all right,
let's
keep talking hockey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Brian Rashog, our TSN Oilers reporter based in Edmonton and based in a city that is going to have a lot of the hockey world focused on it. And let's hope we're focused on it, because that means we've gotten to phase four. That really seems like a theme, doesn't it?
We got to get there. Honestly, don't we, Mark? I mean, we have 3 weeks of guys getting tested virtually every day at their training camps. Guys will have to pay attention. They'll get tested. Hopefully everyone tests negative. They don't, like, one... You're just terrified of a guy getting it and then, like, really, like, spreading it through his team quickly over the course of a day of training camp or something before they know he has it. I don't know, but we're just fingers crossed that that does not happen, really.
Really, it's like what we've been trying to do for the last 4 months. It's controlling those who do get it. And if Mike Johnson gets it, it's okay. Keep Mike Johnson quarantined for the rest of the team, and make sure that those numbers continue to decrease, and then you're off and away, and you're playing games, and hopefully Mike Johnson is playing those games. Let's take a break. When we return, we'll wrap up the show and continue on with bubble life, hubs, and MLB testing, which we just found out the Chicago Cubs that are having testing all came back negative, and they could return to batting practice. Life's okay, I guess, for the Chicago Cubs. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Wrapping up Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe and Mike Johnson, and the Brooklyn Nets just lost another player.
Okay, Mark.
Yes.
I asked about the integrity of a game and when does it become too much. So Brooklyn, we know KD's not going to play. Kyrie's not going to play. DeAndre Jordan's opt out. Spencer Dinwiddie's opt out. Torian Prince just tested positive. That's like five of their top seven. KD hasn't been around. Right now Brooklyn won't make the playoffs, maybe if they lose in the games and the play-in. But their team right now would be a problem. Like, if they happen to make the playoffs, I think it does impact the credibility of that series. Even though they're likely to lose it anyways because they'd be playing Milwaukee or Toronto or whoever, it's still too much. And it doesn't seem like it's a legitimate competition when it gets to that point. I mean, it's almost comical at this stage.
Yeah, they're Keanu Reeves and the replacements.
Right? Exactly.
There's been a joke because, like, the Nets and the Wizards, even with a full roster, are like, okay, we're in it just for this one round. And Bradley Beal has announced that he's opting out. He's their best player. Chris Mannix just made a comment on Twitter. Just put the two teams together and let them play. Like, it's
amalgamation. Yeah, exactly.
But it will be, like, you're looking at matchups now. And, you know, the Raptors right now are in second. They could fall to third. The Celtics could.
You don't want third.
Well,
you want second. Don't you?
Well, okay. The home court doesn't mean what it would have in a second round series against Boston. And, you know, a team like Indiana could be the sixth seed, right? So you'd face them. Well, Victor Oladipo's not playing. And you've handled it. I know Indiana is still, they've had a good season without Oladipo, but the Raptors have been able to handle them. You're right. Given the two, they want to finish second, but you're looking at the matchups.
You just want to avoid Philly, right? Philly right now is tied with Indy for 5-6.
Yeah.
So who knows how that's going to play out. But if Philly drops to 6, you don't want any part of Philly.
No.
Right? So if you finish second, you're going to get some version of Brooklyn, Orlando, Washington.
Right.
And I don't care Oladipo or not. I want Brooklyn, Orlando, or Washington.
Yeah. You can ride most of your bench for those series.
Yeah.
And you'll be
those
okay.
Those teams are going to – you won't recognize some of those teams. So I think the NBA is just trying to get through the play-in and then probably just get through the first round. Because after the first round, presumably all the good teams will advance. That's usually how it happens in the NBA. And then the best teams with full rosters and everyone committed – we'll be going forward from there. The play-in, eight games.
Or the eight regular season games. I shouldn't call them play-in games.
No, play-in, sorry. The regular season games, but it's still kind of unique because it's not a balanced schedule and everything else. Those games are going to be interesting, the approach teams take and the rosters they put out there. And then even the first round, as we've just referenced some of the teams that might make it in the Eastern Conference, it's going to be dicey. But after that, it'll be business as usual.
Yeah,
but the Brooklyn Nets at this point, like, they're heading down there with eight guys. It's like a high school team. It's amazing.
Right. And they, like, I think once you get to the second round, it's going to be really good. And let's hope we get there.
Yes.
I think it's almost not quite the opposite in the NHL. I think those play-in series are going to be really good. And you're going to see opposites. Or upsets, I should say.
Upsets, yeah. And very often in the NHL, the first round is the most fun to watch and be part of. I wonder if the play-in round plus the first round combined to give us about 3 or 3.5 weeks of just wild hockey, apparently 4 to 6 times a day as they stagger the start times, according to Bob McKenzie.
Right. Awesome stuff today, Mike. You and I will be back tomorrow. You ready? At 4 p.m., we'll chat then.